Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports Talk fans. This is Tom Pollen, and we're here another Saturday morning, time for another weekend sports huddle on WRSP Radio. Along with my co-host, Hunter Hodes, it's been a few weeks since I hosted. We're going to be talking about the following headlines: baseball's hot stove league burning bright this past week after some big activities, and you got the winter meetings coming up next week, so going to get hotter still. Pittsburgh Steelers, can they lock down their third AFC North championship in four seasons with a win at Heinz Field this tomorrow against the Ravens? We'll talk about that. And in the meantime, the Bears continue to sputter along behind their lame duck coach and just terrible feelings here in Chicago. Our third segment, Nasser Thomas is back. Got four picks against the spread that you can take to the sports books, have some fun with. And we will finish this show with three bold statements for Real Deal and Overreaction. But first, I want to bring in my co-host from the great state of Virginia, the snowy state of Virginia, Hunter Hodes. Hunter, what's going on?
Yeah, Tom, it's our first snow here in Blacksburg, and it's nice out. It's not sticking to the roads, but it's our first one of the season.
Yeah, that's always a fun one. Yeah, we got some snow here, too, in Chicago, so it's sticking a little bit. We'll see how things go along today. It's actually supposed to be a bit above freezing here today, so we'll see, but they're also talking about blizzard conditions at some point next week, so it's going to be an interesting next couple of weeks weather-wise here in Chicago. Maybe not sports-wise, but anyway, we want to invite fans to join the show, join the conversation. Give us a call, 516-387-1417. You can also get us on our Twitter handle. If you don't want to call in, if you're shy, think that Hunter and I are going to be big meanies to you, but we're not. We're really good guys. You can tweet us at WKD Sports Huddle. And this show is brought to you by author Marcos Accio. Learn the secret of the human mind and the laws of the universe that will guide you toward wealth and health. And who couldn't use more of that? Learn more at www.marcosaccio.com. Hunter, let's kick this thing off. We got wall-to-wall sports going on here, and we're going to go coast-to-coast with our baseball coverage this week, starting with a couple of moves and one thing that started breaking this morning, and I'm not sure how far it's gotten since we've begun preparing for the show, but it appears that Giancarlo Stanton is headed to the New York Yankees. Have you heard anything more about this? Have you heard any of the Yankee players that may be involved, or is this still kind of in works?
It sounds like Starlin Castro may be heading to the Marlins, and it doesn't sound like they're going to get their top prospects. Ken Rosenthal released an update 22 minutes ago saying that Stan is going to approve the trade to the Yankees if he hasn't already, and the deal is just pending physicals until the whole entire deal gets announced. So, I mean, I went to bed after 2 a.m. last night, and this still was deal was going. So I think they were talking almost all night. I wouldn't be surprised if Derek Jeter pulled an all-nighter here for the Marlins and Brian Cashman for the Yankees. Because these people were up all night. So, yeah, this was happening even while I was asleep. But, yeah. It sounds like Giancarlo's going to the Yankees, which means it's Dinger City up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. Everybody says they're waiting for Stanton's approval, but the four teams he let it be known that he would accept a trade to were the Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, and Cubs. So I think the approval is just a formality here. There's no really, as long as they've agreed on names and that's all they're waiting for is approval and physicals, then this thing's a done deal, I would say. And yeah, I've heard Castro mentioned. I also heard a couple other players mentioned that might be a part of it. Headley, your third baseman, now the name just kind of skips. I don't know why all of a sudden my mind went blank.
Which guy are you thinking of?
Jacoby Ellsbury. I don't know why I couldn't think his name all of a sudden. But there was talk that a lot of what hinged this trade on was that the Yankees wanted to shed some salary in return for taking on Stanton's salary. The Yankees are trying to get closer to the luxury tax threshold.
Oh, yeah.
And that might be the reason why the Marlins couldn't get prospects, is that the Yankees wouldn't make the deal, you know, unless they could shed some salary. Castro's not a bad name, though. Castro still has – he's still in the prime of his career, and he could give the Marlins quite a bit of – quite a few years of solid play. So I don't know if Starling Castro's a bad name. That might be one of the reasons why D. Gordon ended up in Seattle yesterday.
Yeah, they're cleaning house down there. No, I mean, it's good for my team. I don't have to see Giancarlo Stanton hit a freaking home run every game against us now for 19 games a season. But also, Tom, this eliminates Bryce Harper going to the Yankees. So that's one less suitor.
Well, that's true. That's right. If the Yankees are trying to get down towards the salary cap threshold, that definitely takes Bryce Harper out of play for them for next year's free agency. So yeah, oh, you only have to worry about the Cubs for that one.
Yeah, or LA.
So, quick question now is, with Stanton on the Yankees, well, what does this mean for American League opponents now that you've got the Stanton, Aaron Judge, and Gary Sanchez in the same lineup? Do you have opposing pitchers, they see the Yankees on their lineup, start pissing themselves, or we got a new murderer's row here in New York. That's some heavy lumber in that lineup.
Yeah, we got like set an over under of like 4 or 5 for how many home runs the Yankees hit. I think every game next season, we all should like make a bet.
You know, that wouldn't be a bad thing, because it's going to be a formidable lineup. So we also, you know, we'll kind of hold on this one now. We'll see if any more names come through before the end of the show. But it's apparent that this deal is happening all but finished. So, but let's get one the Cubs made this past week. The Cubs brought in a right-handed pitcher from the Colorado Rockies. Tyler Chatwood is going to be on the Cubs staff next year. Obviously, they're not bringing John Lackey back. Don't expect Jake Arrieta to be back. I don't think they've even put in even made an offer to Jake Arrieta, except for the qualifying offer that they were prepared to make. So, what do you know about Chatwood? Being in Colorado, have you heard as much about Chatwood? Not as big a name as some that the Cubs could have picked up.
Yeah, I can honestly say I actually had to do some research on him. That's probably one of like the first time or two that I think I've heard of this guy. Which is kind of weird. Usually I know most pitchers in the league. I didn't know much about this guy.
Yeah, he was 8-15 in 33 mm-hmm. starts last season for the Rockies. But if you look at it, and you know Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer have done their homework on this guy, if you look at his home and away splits, they're quite dramatic. And that might be the thing that the Cubs are looking at, because at home in 17 starts, he was hit for a batting average of .302, on-base percentage .395, slugging .489. Batting average balls in play, .355, which is very high for a starting pitcher, for a man in the rotation. But away, the batting average against Chatwood away from Coors Field was .200, on base of .299, slugging a .396. So just incredibly dramatic numbers home and away. And a BABIP batting average balls in play at .218, you know, almost 150 points lower than at home. So
that's the Coors Field for you.
And that's the thing. Chatwood, the breaking ball pitcher, and it's amazing because breaking ball pitchers can get killed in Colorado because of the thin, high altitude thin air. It's very hard to get that pitch to break when you're at home compared to when you're on the road. It's almost like you got to try and bring your breaking ball back under control when you're on the road because you're working so hard to spin it, to get movement on it when you're home at Coors Field.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I was looking, he was better in his first year. He went 12-9 in 2016 and had a lower ERA than last year. It was 3.87, and his WHIP was also a bit lower at 1.37. So, yeah, his 2016 season was a bit better, but I mean, I'm sure the Cubs, the number one leader in the world, as you like to say, did their homework. Not really.
Hey.
No.
Oh, ooh. I'm telling you. Who went farther last year, the Cubs or the Nationals?
All right.
I can't quite. Okay. Yeah, we'll leave that one alone. You know, as they used to say, you know, look at the scoreboard. But with the winter meetings coming up next week, I really haven't heard anybody attached to the, you know, any names attached to the Nationals yet going into next season. Have you heard anything on your end about who the Nationals might be looking at?
Ken Rosenthal wrote an article the other day. I was trying to pull it up. He's saying basically the Nationals are looking at some pitching. They don't have a number five star next year. They could get some depth pitching, but also they may look to make a bigger move. He referenced they could go after Arrieta, which I'm not sure if they should do that, or they could make a trade for Gerrit Cole from the Pirates, or someone like Andrew Cashner, but apparently, he says the Nationals are looking at some pitching. So, and that doesn't surprise me. Mike Rizzo always loves to stock up on pitching. They really don't. They probably only need that and a bunch of. They need some bench help too. That's really all they need. Their lineup is basically set.
And still have some relief pitching to pick up in the for the last 2 months of 2017. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's you say you're not as enthused about Arrieta. Any particular reason why?
I'm just not sure he would be worth that massive contract that he's about to get. Like, I'm sure he would pitch good. I just don't want him to, like, you know, like, go downhill. But, like, I think it would potentially make our rotation, but I just don't want him to just, you know, flatline basically is what they want. I don't want them to overpay for him.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's part of what the Cubs are running into is they don't want to overpay. But interesting thing about Arrieta is between this, the first half and second half of last season, he seemed to stop relying on his power stuff in the second half of last season and started letting his sinking fastball and breaking pitch do all the work, and had a very good second half. It was looking like he was pitching his way out of a contract the first half of last season, pitched his way, I think, back into a better contract the second half. But with his agent being Scott Boras, yeah, you're talking about bidding a guy who's great at bidding up the price for his players. So it's going to be interesting to see what he's going to be able to get for Arrieta now.
Yeah, Scott Boras is like Mike Rizzo's best friend. They get along so well. And I'm not kidding you either. They always he has so many players like under contract for our team, and he's just like Mike Rizzo's best friend. So I wouldn't be surprised if they talked about it.
Yeah, I would expect that to be a big talking point for the Nationals next week. For our third baseball story, big deal because these negotiations were going on for quite a while, the past week to 10 days. Shohei Ohtani from Japan is coming over and had narrowed his choices down to 7. And one of the things that he had let it be known that was part of his decision-making process was he wanted to play for a winner, and now he's going to be signing with the Los Angeles Angels. And I don't know, is that particularly playing for a winner?
No, Tom, you're right, because you want to know why? Because now the Angels can go 69-95 with him and Mike Trout.
Yeah,
oh,
you know,
God, that poor guy is getting wasted out there.
And the hell of it is Trout might be the best player in baseball right now, might actually be one of the best players of all time already. If you look at how his stats compare to other Hall of Famers 7 years into their career, Trout stacks up. You know, Trout doesn't have to take a back seat to anybody. And that's including the greats of the game, Willie Mays, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron. You know, he's right up there with his statistical, trends as he heads into the, you know, his prime years. And now you got Ohtani who can, you know, break 102 miles per hour on the radar gun, and is also a very well-known hitter who can play the outfield. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Angels, you know, what they do with him. Do you think he might be a two-way player on his off days going out into the outfield and playing?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking forward, like I said, to the Angels just missing the playoffs again. You know, it's just a yearly thing that always happens, but you know, I kind of question the choice. I mean, you go to a West Coast team, they're not really like a big payroll team, I should say. I mean, if you wanted to go to a team that's like an upcoming, I mean, the Mariners are right there. They're trying to get into the playoffs. You know what? You could have went there.
Well, he could have went there. He was definitely on track as a possibility for the Texas Rangers, and that would have been big for him too. So, but it's going to be interesting to see how the Angels use him, because this is considered an all round player, not only just a pitcher, but a 5-tool player. And it's going to be interesting because I know Joe Maddon, the kind of manager he is, would have put Ohtani in the outfield when he wasn't pitching. That's just kind of goes without saying the way Joe Maddon likes to, be surprising and bounce around his team. But
yeah,
so
he loves.
So yeah, but you know, it's. I'm going to be looking to see how I'm interested to see how the Angels do, but you know, Japanese pitchers sometimes they come in, they have a good first couple of seasons, then they struggle a lot more. Are we looking at, you know, maybe a, well, let's talk an early real deal or overreaction. Is Shohei Ohtani going to be live up to everything that everybody expects out of him?
It's a little premature. I mean, he's not like Tanaka yet. Tanaka came in from the Yankees and was really good at first, and he's kind of fallen off a little bit. So, yeah, I'm going to go a little overreaction there. I want to see how he pitches first against real MLB hitters.
Well, not just Tanaka, but you got Yu Darvish, who had a couple of down years, injured years. He had some problems. You go back to Hideo Nomo, came in, took the major leagues by storm. Next thing you know, he's basically a third or fourth starter, knocking around baseball. So it's going to be interesting to see if Ohtani, once he comes into the major leagues, he can maintain this kind of play. We want to hear what fans have to say. Give us a call, 516-387-1412. We're going to go into our first break. And when we come back, the Pittsburgh Steelers ready to clinch the AFC North in Week 14. And the Bears, well, they were all eliminated, mathematically eliminated from playoff contention after last week's loss to the 49ers. But we're still going to talk about them anyway because the John Fox Death Watch has begun.
Friday Night Music Productions is calling all musicians out there to join us for a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, an event to beat the Guinness World Record for the largest rock band playing one song in the same place and time. And we want you to join us. For more information and to register, visit us at www.FridayNightMusicProductions.com.
Are you looking for a fun and creative way to enjoy fitness? Whether for health, wellness, or as a hobby, Katie's Sunshine Hoops is the answer. Affordable, custom-made by-hand hula hoops, fitness hoops, art pieces, hoop dancing videos and advice are available at www.katiesunshinehoops.com. Three More Bites, the cookbook series by husband and wife duo Ayo and Bob Lai, will keep you entertained and your appetite satisfied. With recipes inspired by their life stories, cooking and enjoying these unique recipes is a perfect way to spend time with friends and family. Whether you are an experienced chef or just learning to cook, their helpful cooking tips and tricks and delicious recipes will have you begging for three more bites. Pick up your copy of Three More Bites Presents Cozy Cooking and Three More Bites Presents Three Weddings and a Honeymoon today from www.threemorebites.com.
And we're back on Weekend Sports Huddle. This is Tom Pollen along with Hunter Hodes. If you want to join the conversation, have anything to say about the activity in Major League Baseball last week, or want to be part of our football conversation, give us a call, 516-387-1417. And this show is brought to you by author Marco Sacchio. Learn the secret of the human mind and the laws of the universe that will guide you toward wealth and health. Learn more at www.marcosacchio.com. Big week for Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Steelers this week. Playing one of their big rivals, and actually maybe not a rival who's as down as some think, even though they are three games behind the standings. But going to host the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday Night Football. what's your take on the game? I know last week the Steelers and the Bengals played another one of their sloppy, cheap-shotting, you know, hard-hitting, cheap-shotting type games that really left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths after it was over.
I'll first start with that game, and then I'll head, of course, to a real rivalry that where two teams actually respect each other. But, Pittsburgh did have a ferocious comeback. They came from 17-0 down to win 23-20. But it was just, for me and so for so many other people, it was just so hard to focus on it. I'll be the first to say I was almost in tears when Ryan Shazier went down, and I went numb. Like I felt awful. I didn't know if he was going to walk again. It didn't. The updates kept coming in, and it was. It's just something you never want to see, and it just sees how violent this game can be. And then, of course, you had Vontaze Burfict getting a taste of his own medicine from Juju Smith-Schuster with a massive block, illegal, yes, and then he gets suspended for it, which. Don't get me started on that. And then, I'm not sure. Did you see what Mike Mitchell said to the media this week about what's going on in the NFL?
No, I didn't see that. Why don't you go ahead and go ahead?
He called out Roger Goodell, basically saying, the discipline is a complete joke. This is football. He goes, if you don't want playing football, let's take our pads off and let's play flag football. It makes it easier on me. He goes, I don't have to wear heavy stuff. He said some very great things. It basically saying like, this isn't football that I know. And, you're just, no one knows what a suspension is or a fine is. And there's no really set mandate of rules. And, it's hard to disagree with him for what he said, especially after, Georgia Loca, who hit Antonio Brown helmet to helmet in the end zone, gets a fine. But when Juju Smith-Schuster gets a block that, okay, it's illegal, but it's not, like, predatory, makes a block and then gets suspended for it, even though, yes, I get it, he taunted him, which that's a little too much. But it's just... It just really doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I agree with Mike Mitchell, though.
Yeah, it's, and there's going to be back and forth about whether or not, players are, hitting too hard or what's a legal hit, what's an illegal hit these days. But I completely agree with the point about the fact that penalties and fines and suspensions are so inconsistent, and it's really terrible. And the hell of it is, we're in for five more years of it. Roger Goodell just signed another 5-year contract as commissioner of the NFL.
Yeah, I saw that. That's just awful.
So, but. It really is the officiating, and some of it, I don't know if I put it on the officials as much. It's kind of hard for them to know what to call and what not to call these days, because there are so many rules in place about what you can and can't do. And I know they're the ones on the field. They're the ones who are the targets of much of the criticism for how games get called the last few years, and people are saying that it's a lack of quality officials, but I'm not so sure. It's just that officials go into games unsure of their ground when they hit the field.
Yeah, and you saw it on Monday night too. The officials, it was just awful officiating. I mean. Yeah, did you watch the game, Tom? Did you hear what Sean McDonough said about the officiating?
I watched half of it. I was able to watch the first half.
Okay. Yeah, he basically, I'm not sure if you heard, he was like, you know, like, no one came to, like, watch you guys, the officials, like, just stop making, like, this game about yourselves. And, I mean, he makes a good point about that. There were some really bad flags that were getting called, and it looked like they were just kind of taking over the game. And him and John Gruden were not pleased throughout that entire game.
Yeah, but you got officials who are told to call the games tighter by the league office.
Yeah.
You know, you got officials who are told that these certain things are penalties, these certain things can't be done. But no, the league office doesn't take as much of the blame for it as the officials do out on the field. I don't know if I just think the officials have it a lot rougher than they used to 20 years ago to try and decide, you know, where the line is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I guess it's a bit hard being an NFL official, but I just want, like, the same things called consistently. And it's also – that's a problem with NHL officials too, believe it or not, that they're also very inconsistent with what they call as penalties. And, I mean, I just want it all consistent. Like, I want all pass interferences to basically be equal. Like, they're – every year I look at it, I'm like, how do you not see this stuff? It just blows my mind.
Yeah. I think that's what everybody wants is a lot more consistency, being able to judge things a little bit clearer. But a lot of that comes down to also being an official. It's subjective. It depends on what each official sees sometimes. So I don't mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if it can ever be dialed down to the point where you're going to be able to quantify it into this one range. This is interference. This isn't interference. This is a legal hit. This isn't a legal hit. But the pressure has been on the on-field officials more over the last 5 to 10 years about making sure that this stuff gets called, and I think that leads to a lot of the inconsistency too.
And like, I don't like right now that Rob Gronkowski is only getting a game for basically intentionally elbowing, giving a player a concussion, and then yet Juju Smith-Schuster gets a game for maybe an illegal block. That kind of discipline is just a joke. And
yes, it is.
I mean. Yeah, I mean, Gronk should be gone. Like, I want to play Gronk. Don't get me wrong. We play the Patriots next week. But you know what? If he was suspended for that game too, I mean, it would be well-deserved. Like, I want to beat them when they have him. But, like, you know, it's just disgusting for what he did.
Yeah, it is. I won't argue that. Let's talk a little bit about the game coming up with the Steelers and Ravens, because mm-hmm. the Ravens, you know, the Steelers, again, they struggle to get past their opponents, but, you know, definitely still they're 10-2, one of the best teams, tied with the best record in the AFC. But the Ravens, even though they struggle on offense with Joe Flacco, their defense is just massively tough.
Yeah, they do have a good defense, but they will be down Jimmy Smith this week and for the rest of the season. He's been arguably the best corner in the NFL this year. Pro Football Focus has him rated, I think, as the number one corner in football, or it was right around there. But he's been outstanding the past couple seasons, and they won't have him to lock down Antonio Brown. So it's definitely going to be a bit tougher for them. But they do have a good unit. The Ravens offense, I can't get behind that unit. That's just an awful unit. The
yes.
Ravens, to me, they're like the definition to me of kind of like an average team. Great defense, awful offense, and great special teams, coupled with a pretty good head coach and a bad quarterback. I mean, that's really average. I mean, and they really haven't beaten anyone this year anyway. excuse me. The Steelers whooped them by 17 in Baltimore. I afraid it was like week three, I think. Yeah, I think they played them like week three or four. And they shut down the Ravens' offense really bad. They only allowed just one touchdown And then they ended up trying to go for two. So one touchdown and a field goal in Baltimore. So it's definitely going to be tough for them. The Steelers are going to be coming out fired up. They're going to want this game for Ryan Shazier. It's going to be a pretty emotional scene there, I would think, at Heinz Field, even though Shazier's not playing. But this is a team that the Steelers, they do not take lightly. They're not going to look past, even though they have the Patriots next week. And they know the Ravens are their real big rival, and they're going to want to put this division away tomorrow night.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to look past the Ravens either. Just to give you a quick look, against teams that are currently above 500, the Ravens have an 0-4 record. So the Steelers are 3-1 against teams that are currently over 500. So, you know, drastic difference in how both teams approach playing the top teams on their schedule. So,
yeah,
and they kind of calls out the Ravens a little bit, because they are fattening up on a lot of the teams, you know, lower echelon teams, but can't beat anybody who's spent the year winning.
Yeah, I mean, their best win probably came against like the Lions or something, and the Lions aren't even that good. So,
the Lions have pulled it off. Yeah.
Yeah, and like you look at the quarterbacks that they've beaten off the top of my head, Tom Savage, Brett Hundley, Andy Dalton, the backup to Derek Carr, Matthew Stafford, DeShone Kizer. I mean, most of these guys are just backups. Except,
yeah.
I mean, Matthew Stafford, okay, like he's a top 10 quarterback, but the Lions have really all, like you said, they've fallen off. But other than that, they haven't beaten a good quarterback this year, or a good team for that matter, and they've lost. I mean, they lost to the Bears at home. That's just kind of sad. Even though the Steelers also lost to the Bears, so it's not sad.
Well, speaking of the Bears, good segue into our next little piece of conversation. Don't want to spend too much time on the Bears. They're not really worth spending a whole lot of time on after last week's pathetic effort. If you want to even call it an effort, against the San Francisco 49ers. You got a game that was eminently winnable. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, they were playing Garoppolo. Garoppolo played very well. Garoppolo kind of exposed the Bears' defense, which that unit actually was playing fairly well this year. But Garoppolo completed 26 passes for 393 yards. So, had a great game, even though he didn't get the Niners into the end zone. Really had a great game against the Bears. Mitch Trubisky, again, very rough, not given too many chances, was 12 of 15, 102 yards on the touchdown, but really doesn't feel as effective as what a lot of people in Chicago, saw by their eyes on television. And another thing is, it seems like the Bears have forgotten about their running game again. They're trying to stretch Jordan Howard out towards his tackles, and Jordan Howard is a between the tackles type runner who gets a lot of yards after contact. He's not necessarily a guy who's you try to go outside, and that has Bear fans very upset with offensive coordinator Al Loggins. And it's overall, that's a couple of the big reasons why, it's very well known that that Fox and Loggins and probably all of a sudden I can't think of his defensive coach's name. I'm telling you, Hunter, never get old.
Vic
Fangio.
Fangio. Yeah, I got it.
I know. Oh, my God. That's terrible. But you know what really summed it up for Bears fans? The second quarter, they They're on their own, 33 or 34. It's basically fourth down and 6 inches. They're up 7-3, and they get, you know, you've only won 3 games all year, and you can run the ball. You got a big quarterback, a great chance to run a quarterback sneak, pick up those yards, and keep your drive going. And they punted. You know, the punting unit was on the field the entire time. So they didn't even consider going for it. And San Francisco was one of the worst run defenses in the NFL.
Yeah.
And the Bears are going outside, and the Bears are not running Howard inside the tackles, and they didn't go for the fourth and 6 inches. And that's one of the big reasons. Yeah, that's just pathetic.
That's just awful. Head coaches that do that, man. It makes no sense to me. I don't get that either. But you know what I did like that game? You know that Tariq Cohen reenacting Devin Hester. Oh, my gosh.
My God. You know.
Tom, he was Devin Hester reincarnated.
He caught that punt, and he started going backwards. And you could hear everybody in Chicago going, no, 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 no. And the next thing you know, he finds this opening. And he's gone. He's past the coverage team and going all the way. And you just couldn't believe, because I think he ran 20 yards backwards before he finally started heading up the field again. So he turned a 60-yard punt return for a touchdown into about an 80, 90-yard punt return for a touchdown by the time he was done.
Yeah, that was true Devin Hester style right there.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun, and boy, you talk about the only bright spot we had for that game. If you want to talk, we want to bring our audience into the conversation as always. If you want to talk about that, talk about anything else we've mentioned on the show today, give us a call 516-387-1417. But on our next segment, we're going to take a quick break. We have Nostradamus on fire still, even though he had a rough week last week. Hunter Hody's going to try and pick himself back up off the floor. Nostradamus predicts coming up next.
Einstein and Mu is Jennifer Milius' exciting new children's book series about two black and white cats who are brother and sister and have great adventures. The first book, Einstein and the Leap, is all about playful Einstein. Suitable for children of all ages and cat lovers alike, Einstein and the Leap is a wonderfully written and illustrated book that will capture your heart. Buy your copy of Einstein and the Leap today at www.rsplaunchpad.com, Amazon, or Barnes & Noble Nook. Would you like to advertise on WRSP Radio? Your ad can be heard on multiple platforms, from radio to video and even print magazine. WRSP Radio is looking for advertisers now, and our amazing low rates won't last forever. So contact us today at info@wrspradio.com. That is info@wrspradio.com.
And we're back on WRSP's Weekend Sports Huddle. This is Tom Holland along with Hunter Hodes. And the show is brought to you by author Marco Sacchio. Learn the secret of the human mind and the laws of the universe that will guide you toward wealth and health. Or you can listen to Nostradamus. Learn more at www.marcosacchio.com. A little bit of a rough patch for Nostradamus last week. well, hey, it happens. At least I wasn't 1-3. But, well, we both got disappointed by the Raiders. And, you know, I told you that the Cardinals game against the Rams was a big trap game for the Rams because they played the Eagles. And played the Vikings.
And then my Falcons.
And we're looking ahead to the Eagles. And it's a sign of great coaching sign of the fact that Sean McVay is really a top coach is that he would not let the Cardinals get down, let down between those games against a team that, you know, you knew that they should have beaten fairly easily and actually did.
Yeah, and the Falcons screwed me over. Ugh.
I told you about that one. I told you.
I was close. I almost had it.
I told you do not count on the Falcons in that game. See, sometimes not. See, there are times, Hunter, when you pick as a fan. When you the one week you pick the Chiefs against the Jets, and you're saying, well, the Chiefs have to pull it up. The Chiefs have, you know, they're still in the playoff fight. They got to come through. They're going to come through. But the thing is, they hadn't come through for 6 weeks. So.
No,
You know,
bad pick, bad week.
So, but you have, you can't just say, well, this team is due for a win. Because in a lot of ways, that's how Vegas and a lot of the sports books make their money. When people think that a team is due for a win. No team is ever due for a win. You're better off playing trends, and the trends say that the Kansas City was a bad bet and still is a bad bet. So, but we're going to kind of leave the past where it is. We don't want to dwell on the past because we got some new picks coming up for you this week. Hunter, why don't you go ahead and get us started?
All right. My first one, I'm taking the Rams -1 over the Eagles. I do expect this to be a close game, but the Eagles kind of got exposed last week against a Seattle defense that is down Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas.
Earl Thomas was back.
Yes, that's my
And
Richard Sherman. Yeah. Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman, two-fourths of a great secondary. And the Eagles' offense really did show up. It was just kind of odd. I mean, I think it probably had to do with the Seattle. Of course, it being in Seattle, it's one of the loudest stadiums, if not the loudest stadium in the entire league. Russell Wilson played great, but now they have to go. They have to stay out west to play against one of the best offenses in football in L.A. Sean McVay has done outstanding there. Jared Goff has played great, and I'm going to take the Rams here. I think. This is their time. I'm just not sure I trust Philadelphia yet. A stat I saw looking at this game, the Eagles, I think, have only beaten one team over 500 this year and going into that Seahawks game. And, you know, when you beat up on bad teams, you know, it doesn't really do much for you. Then you got to go against good competition. So now the Eagles are going to go against a really good Rams team, but I'm going to take the home team here. I think this is a safe pick.
Well, there's no such thing as a safe pick. Never is. Wow. However, and by the way, that point spread is 1.5, not 1. So, but still a good spread. But, you know, you do, there is that issue, and you really touched on it, is the Eagles have been playing kind of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man of schedules against the NFL. And have, you know, do what a good team has to do against the soft schedule is you got to rack up wins. You got to take advantage of that. But, you know, they have had their against teams that are currently 500. They're 1-1. And I do think the Rams are a better team. But don't take last week's Eagles result in Seattle. You know, don't get caught in what's called recency bias, where you take a look at the team's previous game and kind of project that out to what you're going to see next week and maybe the next 2 weeks. The Chiefs are still a tough team. Carson Wentz is still the quarterback. That's still a tough defense. Still probably one of the best all-around teams in NFL. So while I think the Rams are a good bet, and if I were going to pick on this game, I would agree with you, but I'm staying away from it because it's just you don't want to put your money on a game that can go either way with two of the top teams in the league.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us your next pick?
Yeah, it was. I was going back and forth on it, but I'm taking the Patriots minus 11 against the Dolphins, and I don't usually pick double-digit spreads, but I think this one's just kind of easy. The Dolphins are terrible, and they have really nothing. Tom Brady has just been absolutely flawless this season. I know they won't have Rob Gronkowski, but is it really going to matter against a really bad Dolphins team that has quarterback is Jay Cutler, Matt Moore? I've totally forgot. Like, both whoever started, both not good. I know Tom Brady, he struggled a couple times down in Miami, but this is just – they're not a good Dolphins team. The Patriots should, I think, wipe – I think I'm going to say that they should wipe the floor with the Miami Dolphins and going into a massive matchup against the Steelers next week. Take the Patriots, minus 11. I think they're going to cover this game.
You know, not a bad pick, Hunter. Again –
yeah.
One of the things I look at and why I didn't make this one of mine is you do have the Patriots looking ahead to the Steelers next week. Now, Bill Belichick is the best coach in the NFL, maybe one of the best coaches ever in the NFL.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he's in my top two with Vince Lombardi. But you also have a team, yes, they're minus Gronkowski. Yeah, they should wipe the turf with the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins have nothing. The Patriots are so much better. They're a Super Bowl contender. But minus 11 with the Steelers coming up, that's a rough spread, but I think, you know, I think that's a solid pick. And the Patriots have been such a great play over the last few weeks. So, you know, just bringing that up, too. So I think that's a very good pick, Hunter.
There we go. That's what I like to hear. And my last one, take the Packers minus 3 against the Browns. No one likes to say, oh, this is the week. Cleveland's finally going to win the game. No, Cleveland is not going to win this week because the Packers because the Packers have to win this game. If you lose to Cleveland, you should have, like, freestanding – you should just have 3 wins deducted from your win total. it's just sad. And they're getting Aaron Rodgers back next week, and they'll be able to run the table if they win this game. I don't think they're going to get in, but they'll definitely have a chance. If they win, they'll get to 7-6, and the Falcons will be 8-5. Wait, no, the Falcons won. Oops. Wait, yeah. These records are just – yeah, the Falcons are 8-5. Yeah, they are. So there'll be 1 game back, but really they're actually 2 games back because the Falcons have the tiebreaker over the Packers. Josh Gordon is back. He had a decent day this week, and he may have a good day especially against the Packers defense, but you know, you can't trust the Browns. You never can. Like I said, if the Packers lose this game, they should really just forfeit their season. There's really no point in playing the season if they just lose this game. I think Brett Hundley is going to play well here. I expect him to have a good day, even though it's on the road. The Packers have kind of been hot and cold with him, but I think they'll have a good day today. I think it's a good pick against the Browns.
All right. Again, not one I would go with. I just don't have as much faith in the Packers. So we'll see. We only got 5 minutes left in the show. It's amazing how fast this show has gone, Hunter. But I got to get my picks in. I'm Nostradamus is going to open up, going to take the Bengals minus the 6.5 at home against the Chicago Bears. The Bengals, they're a tough bet, but you know, the Bears are not, the wheels are not only off the Bears bus, the Bears bus is riding on the rims. There's no more rubber on those tires. So I would say, you know, take the 6.5. I really cannot see the Bears playing the way they are. You know, playing not to lose, playing to as conservative as they have been. John Fox playing like he's afraid for his job instead of playing like he's ready to win a game. I think it's prime to take the Bengals minus 6.5. My second game, New York Jets minus 1 at Denver. Yes, Denver is that bad. This is not recency bias here. This is the fact that Denver is a sucky team. They have no quarterback. Trevor Siemian has been exposed. They are awful. I don't care where they're playing this game. I don't care if they're playing this game at Denver, in New York, in Mexico City, in Guadalajara. The Jets are going to beat the Broncos, and that one, you know, go ahead, pick up that 1 point and take the Jets. Third pick. The Chargers, minus 6 at home against the Washington Deadskins. last week's loss to the Cowboys has touched off the dumpster fire that has been kind of smoldering in Washington for the last month. The Chargers have their sights set on this AFC West title. They've actually, after starting the season 0-4, have caught up to the Chiefs, and they're now 6-6. And tied in a three-way tie with the Oakland Raiders, Kansas City Chiefs for first in the AFC West. And I really think the Los Angeles Chargers are going to win the AFC West. So
yeah,
the team without a home. Yeah, the team without a home, I think they line up very well against the Redskins. Phillip Rivers has been very good. I have no faith in the Redskins being able to win this game. And take the Chargers minus 6. My fourth bet, take the Tennessee Titans minus the 3 at the Arizona Cardinals. So, you know, a little bit questionable, but, you know, one thing, but I will tell you why. As this game started as a 2.5 point spread with Tennessee is favored. 76% of the public money has gone in on Arizona. Okay. That should have brought that spread down to 2 or 1.5. But the spread has actually gone up to 3. Because, see, the spread is set by how much money is being bet on each team, not necessarily where Vegas thinks each team is going to win. So 24% of the public money has only been bet on Tennessee, but that spread's going up 3. That tells me that the sharps, the professional bettors, are clobbering the Tennessee Titans. They are betting heavy on the Titans, and the sports books had to bring that point spread up to get more action on Arizona. So take the Tennessee Titans, bet with the pros, bet with the sharps, minus 3 at Arizona. And sorry, we don't have time for real or overreaction this week. We are out of time on the show, and which is really sorry because I think we had a couple of – well, let's do them. We can go over a little
bit.
With the Yankees acquiring Stanton, should the other 29 teams just pack it in for 2018 and award the Yankees the World Series trophy? Real deal or overreaction, Hunter?
Overreaction.
Come on.
We got Houston and Cleveland still in the American League.
Okay. You know, I'm going to say overreaction too, because you never know what happens during a baseball season, but it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Second, Eli Manning is starting again for the Giants tomorrow. Unfortunately, his streak took a beating last week, which got Ben McAdoo fired. But I'm saying he will also be the Giants starter when the 2018 kicks off. Real deal or overreaction?
I'm going to go overreaction. He's not starting next year. I think they're going to go. They're going to get a quarterback in this year's draft, whether it's Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. And Eli is going to go to somewhere like Jacksonville. Mark my words. He is not going to be the Giants quarterback next season.
Yeah, I would agree. I say that's an overreaction. Because I agree with you, the Giants are going to be in prime position to pick up a rookie quarterback who they can plug in and kind of get started when they put their new coach in place. So, and the final, Falcons beat the Saints on Thursday Night Football. They're still a game back in the division, though, but The Falcons will win the NFC South. Hunter, real deal or overreaction?
Overreaction. I think the Saints are still going to win it. They still have to play the Falcons, I think, one more time in New Orleans. And I think that's when the Saints are going to clinch the division. And just for everyone out there, I did have a surprise bonus pick for Nasir Thomas. I'm taking the Seahawks -2.5 against the Jaguars. So that's my fourth and final bonus pick. Yeah.
Battle of the defenses. Folks, it's been a great time here with you for Hunter Hodes. We're going to see so long now. Catch up with us again on Weekend Sports Huddle next week at 10 a.m. Central Time. Talk to you then.